Hope you like my background. I'll explain that in just a minute. But I wanted to tell you that I'm so glad to have expanded the reach of our show. We're back on YouTube. We're going to continue on Rumble. And of course, our podcast is ranked in the top 5.5% of 3 million podcasts, actually 3.5 million podcasts rated by Listen Notes worldwide. We're kicking butt and taking names on this, and that's all because we have great supporting cast. That's our audience. And you guys give me great show ideas. You give me good information. I've got a lot of you that just email me routinely with really, really interesting stuff, and I get a lot of show ideas from that. And now we're back on YouTube. Just made a post not too long ago, and my gosh, we already have almost 180 comments. I was and I wanted to just thank everybody for the kind words. Really do. But we all have something in common. We want to carve out a world that's worth living in. And we want to preserve that for our children and ultimately our grandchildren. And I'm sure we all share that in common. And I just wanted to share with you that I'm going to embark on, and I'll do other things too, but I'm going to embark on a series on the pyramids. We are headed for some problems. We truly are. And I don't mean the war in Ukraine and possibly getting out and expanding to World War III, which is a terrible nightmare. And I certainly pray that that does not happen. But I'm talking about the earth itself is ready to turn on the people. It's done it before. There's been five extinctions that you can validate. And even most mainstream geologists are now agreeing with this. And we're headed towards another one. And I'm going to talk about that here on the show, and we're going to go down the path of the pyramids and what they teach us. But there's many other avenues we're going to explore with this. Now, are we still going to do our geopolitics? Well, this enters right into geopolitics, but yes, we are. Is a standalone. Realize that there are limitations on what you can do on certain platforms and what you can say, but we will, and ultimately we express our full self, just not on every platform. Hey, we're brought to you by this great product right here. Metasomer gel. Now, while I was away from YouTube, I got really, really sick. I got RSV and pneumonia. The pneumonia, no big deal. Got over that pretty quickly here. Antibiotics, some steroids, prednisone. And I was pretty good with that in about 4 or 5 days. But the RSV, holy cow, that was not good at all. And strip lung linings so they wouldn't come back. And some of them haven't come back, but most of them have. And I'm doing things I haven't done in 25 years. I got real determined because I was, they said, headed for bad things like oxygen and doing each lifestyle, shortened lifespan. And this was in the tail end of COVID when this happened. So they had the hospital restrictions. So my wife couldn't go in with me. And so I remember she picked me up in the parking lot and she said, well, it's not good, honey, but I'm determined. My son is my gym partner. And we're going to get to work. And fortunately, I came across these guys named Scotty Sachs, Jimmy Schwinn, Sean McDonald, North American director of IWantMyHealthBack.com, the NanoSoma products. And this right here is just one of the two products that I really feature. Let me talk about the other. It's a liquid spray, and I've shown that before. And this is when I was away from one of the major platforms, so you don't know the story. And my friend Scotty Sachs, who I partner with, and we're doing a syndication effort together, former Hollywood producer, great guy. Scotty said, Dave, you need to try these products. You're in terrible shape. You're horrible. You look awful. You can't talk. And I said, I know. It's really bad. I can maybe only do about 15 minutes of broadcasting at a time. And he said, try this. And it was the spray. And five sprays once a day is the maintenance dose, but it's all natural. So I was doing it every hour on the hour. And it can't hurt you. And what it does is it builds up your immune system. And I was like, gosh, I'm really getting over this stuff. I'm doing good. So I'm back in the gym with my son and I've got really good energy. And this took about 2 or 3 months. And as we started approaching the summer months, my joints started to bother me because I got bone on bone, arthritis in my knee, lack of collagen, knee replacement needed. My hips were bothering me a little bit. And Scotty gave me the gel. And I rub it on. He says, Dave, this is really to make your skin look younger. But he said, it has pluripotent stem cells in it. And what it does is it puts those back into those joints. I do full leg workouts now with no pain in my knees or hips. None. Zero. The muscles, oh, yeah, I still feel it from a couple nights ago, but no soreness in the joints. Now, these products don't cure anything. What they do is they boost your immune system, so you meet the challenges from an increased and enhanced immune system. You really need to look at this. If this is the first time you've heard me talk about these products, I turned my life around. I'm doing things physically, including playing a little basketball that I haven't done in 25 years. And I'm really enjoying life. And I owe my life to these two products. Go to iwantmyhealthback.com/DaveHodges. iwantmyhealthback.com/DaveHodges. Okay. We're going to get into the pyramids, but I got to give you a background in this very first preliminary piece. My dad had special operations stuff he did in his role in the Navy and then later as a civilian contractor with a top secret agreement. And he worked with people from other countries, namely Germany, and they reversed engineered their theoretical physics in a lab. And they tried to make some practical applications to it in the lab, but they didn't really do application much. That was compartmentalized and it moved on to a new era. Well, my dad started telling me all the things he did in 1985, actually 1984 and 1985 when he passed away. And he knew he was terminal and he wanted me to know. And he said, "But you can never tell anyone, son." He said, "You can't tell anybody because your mom lives off my two pensions and they'll come and get it for violation of a security oath." So I agreed, never went, and I didn't. I was true to this. He said, "You're free to talk about this after your mom passes, but realize there could be some people that might not like what you're saying." And I took that into account, and I've given measured releases of this. My mom died in 2011, and I've given measured release to the material. But let me tell you how this kind of thing just unfolded, okay? Because I'm going to set up the piece with the pyramids, really tell us our future by looking at our past. And you need to take this very seriously. I used to be the biggest skeptic of these stories, but as I started to research them, I couldn't debunk them. I could only support them. And as some of you know, I'm a trained researcher. I've taught courses in statin research. I've written courses in them. You know, I have a psychology background and I've taught history. And that kind of is all blended together to give me the perspective on how to really understand how to do this research and be able to effectively evaluate other people's research. All right, let's go to 1992. For the first time ever, I was listening to Art Bell. And wife's out of town on business. I'm alone in the house. I had a basketball game on. And then I had on KTR radio. And this is the station that Art Bell and Coast to Coast was on at the time. They later left that station because it went ultra liberal. And Art was conservative and they didn't like his show. So he moved over in the Phoenix market to KFYI. And he was on what, 600 stations at one time? Well, he had a man on named Vance Davis. Now, remember, I can't talk about what I know about secret space program, reverse engineered theoretical physics that never ended up in NASA. Never, never ended up in NASA. And so I'm listening to this man named Vance Davis. And Vance was assigned to NATO and he was in the NSA and the Army. NSA is key. And they wanted them to imitate German scientists that use occultic methods to derive scientific advances. And they said, hell no. And they skipped town. They deserted. H.W. Bush wanted to prosecute them. This was in 1988. And they couldn't do it without having a big embarrassment. So they had to release them. And then they brutalized them in the media. The Gulf Breach 7, they ran from UFOs. UFOs had nothing to do with it. Vance Davis, very, very good friend of mine. We've been friends now for 33 years. And so I heard him on Art. And he's talking about the secret space program. He's talking about his work. And then he was also talking about reverse engineering from Operation Paperclip, theoretical physics that was advanced from the Germans. And I thought, I got to talk to this guy because he's not saying anything I've been told that I can't say. So this is the time really of his early, early internet, almost pre-internet. It was hard to track him down. Eventually, I did. And I wrote him a letter and I said, "Dear Vance, got things I can't talk about with what you talked about on Art Bell on this date, but I'd like to talk to you about it because you and I take the same risk." Well, I didn't get a call back from Vance. I got a call from a gentleman named Bill Pollack. And Bill Pollack, ex-CIA, ex-Air Force Intel, didn't know that at the time. He says, "I'm Vance Davis' associate, David. he asked me to check you out, and I'm going to ask you some questions honestly. And he started asking me about my father's work, and I would acknowledge some of it. A lot of it, I said, I can't talk about that because it's classified. And I said, I didn't necessarily arrive at this through open source, so I can't talk about this. And he said, okay, I understand. But we talked for 2 hours. And at the end of 2 hours, he goes, I've decided I'm going to introduce you to Vance Davis. He goes, I think you're the real deal. Well, I wasn't any deal. I just had information passed on to me by my father, and I wanted to talk to someone who I could talk to about this that I couldn't talk to anybody else about. So the three of us became very good friends. We actually had business endeavors, and some of those, I've actually talked about that recently in some other media, but I'll bring it here. But that's another story for another time. So Vance and I and Bill, we had a three-way conversation one night. We talked to about 3 a.m. I had to get up and go teach my classes the next day, but it was fascinating. And Bill and Vance were confirming secret space program. Bill had actually had done work with my father when my father first left the Navy. He worked at a place in Westminster, Colorado called Sunstrand Electronics. And they did a lot of really secret aerial stuff for NSA, CIA, the Navy, the Air Force, and it was all classified. And Bill was working that. He was an electronics expert. My dad was both an electrical and a mechanical engineer as well as a physicist. And they worked together. They actually played on the company softball team together. And so Bill said, did you ever go to your dad's games? I said, yeah, all the time. I was a little kid and he used to drag me along with him. So we had had an informal history. And he goes, well, I'm sure that you went to some of the after parties. I go, oh, yeah, I remember going there. And I had Coke and everybody else drank beer. Bill and I became the best of friends and he became my mentor in this business. Now let's cycle forward about 4.5 years, early 96 into mid 96. And through the end of the century, Bill would have conferences and he would invite high-level people. And we all had to have non-disclosure agreements. So, if an astronaut came and he said, well, I know this and that, and I saw this when I was in NASA, he would tell us, but we weren't free to go speak about it. And there were civil penalties we agreed to, and they were hefty. And I could mention now, like Edgar Mitchell. He's passed, so I can mention him. And we had Brian O'Leary. And we also had a couple that might still be alive. So I've got to be careful not to mention them. But we probably had in total about five or six astronauts and some top scientists and a couple of NASA people. And then, Art Bell, science advisor Richard Hoagland, was frequently a visitor to what we did. And he and Bill and Vance were good friends. And I met Richard through him. And my knowledge base just exploded. And my part there was they wanted to know what my dad was working on, what the hell he found out. And so, under non-disclosure, I shared all this. And so we met in La Placidus, New Mexico, which is north of Albuquerque off the I-25 corridor. And we met at Bill's house. And we all stayed in general area in the motels and stuff. And then we'd converge and we would have 2 and 3 day conferences. And some people would come in, do a thing, and then leave. Some people would stay the whole time. I stayed the whole time because I was fascinated. It was like a kid in a candy store. And I really figured out how my dad's work fit into the overall scheme of where society was going. And this really gave me the background and the knowledge to move forward with getting a role in the media. But at that time, there was no media for Dave Hodges. So it's 1999. The meetings kind of died down. Vance and Bill and I are involved in Enron, and I'll get into that in another story. So we kind of moved away from that, and the three of us formed a company, and we were doing work on, let's say, advanced theoretical physics. And so we kind of moved away from the meetings, and it's 99. Now, moving into the early part of the century, my wife and I had decided we need to get out of Glendale, Arizona, the part we were in. We bordered Phoenix. You had the gangs, the graffiti, and all the nonsense. And we didn't want to raise a family in that environment. So we moved out in North Maricopa County, north of Phoenix. We're about 60 miles northwest of downtown Phoenix. About, well, we were, we're seeing building now, but about 15 miles from civilization, so to speak. And about 300 neighbors we had when we got out there. And unfortunately for us, the bad guys, John McCain and company, They wanted to steal our land because they had designs based on the Central American Free Trade Agreement to build an international corridor highway system. And one of the hubs that they wanted to have freight, rail and air and super highway with tentacles, it was in our area, and they wanted our underground water. We live on top of the Haciapa Water Reservoir, which is the largest underground water reservoir in the state of Arizona. And they wanted all that, and they didn't want to pay us. So they started a process of systematically taking away our property rights so we would eventually be forced to move. And some people were. But there were a cadre of us that hung in there, and we fought an 8-year legal battle that we eventually won. And this started around 2003, and it went until about late 2003 and went to 2012, where the Goldwater Institute was about the only lawyers that wouldn't buckle under John McCain, and they stood up for us. Clint Bullock, the director at the time, is now on the Arizona State Supreme Court. Thank you, Clint. We always will owe you. Well, I learned how dirty politics was to be combined with my knowledge of what I was learning from these dignitaries at the secret, clandestine meetings. And I got into the media. I started appearing, I became the spokesperson for our group, and I started appearing on various talk shows around the world. And world, yes. The world took interest in what we were because we were just little old people minding our business, a lot of small business owners. I was in education, a college basketball coach as well. And we were just average people and being picked on by big government. And it was a compelling story. And went through a lot of harassment, been shot at, been run off the road. I mean, those are stories I've told in other venues. And let's put it this way, the other side didn't like losing. And for now, we have won. Now, what does this do with everything else? Well, in this whole time, I'm friends with Vance, and I'm learning about the background of the New World Order. There is such a thing. They don't call themselves that. They go by various trade names and so forth. But I really learned a lot about this. And it really prepped me to jump into what I'm doing now. I had experience dealing with politicians that were not reputable. I had experience dealing with some of the media that would label me. And I had a lot done to me that Donald Trump had done to him. And you're a conspiracy theorist. Conspiracy theory? Hell, I can't even build a fence on my property. If I have a fire in my kitchen, I can't get a permit to rebuild. That's hardly a conspiracy. That's a catastrophe. And this is what we went through. Eventually, we won. Eventually. So that brings me forward to beginning to expose information I learned. In my meetings I had with Bill and the dignitaries, great men. I mean, I wondered, what the hell am I doing here? Because this group was so impressive. And I really feel that God was prepping me to do the work I'm doing now. In fact, I walked away from college basketball coaching in 2012. My news director at the time, Bill Pollack's wife, yeah, my mentor, she was my news director, and she said, "Dave, this is your calling, and you can't do it as long as you're a coach. Maybe you could teach a little bit, but this is too consuming. You really need to walk away." And she was on me for 2 years. And eventually I said, "Annie, I think you're right." I said, "And also my son's playing high school sports. He's getting into all that, junior high and high school sports, and I want to see him compete. I want to be part of his life and share that with him." And so I walked away, and then voila, in 2007, I started the show part-time on the radio, went to the website in 2012, and then, I really began to expand in 2014 as I went independent. I was on RBN for a while, and I went independent, and I'm independent today, and we have a lot of people that pick up our work. So that's a background of where I'm coming in. A lot of the people that will hear me on YouTube now do not know my background. And they go, "Well, what qualifies him to talk about this stuff?" Knowledge from 1985 going forward, personal experience with corrupt government, understanding how globalists work because we were attacked in effect by the Central American Free Trade Agreement people, which is a move towards regionalism to eventually go to globalism. So yeah, I've seen it all. And that kind of brought me to here I am. Now, let me tell you what I have come to the conclusion of. We are going to relive history unless there's a divine miracle, a second coming of Jesus, God's intervention. It's something dramatic has to happen. Let me share with you a little bit about when I was teaching, and this is around 2008, 2010, 2012. In my undergrad classes, I would get a lot of foreign exchange students, and they'd be places from places like Germany and Sweden and the UK and Russia. The Russian girl was, oh, she was so brilliant, and her father was a big party official. And boy, I'd learn a lot from her. But let me tell you what the European young adults told me. And this is going 2010, 2012. They said the Earth is going through a slight pole shift. True. I researched this. Back in the early part of the century, we readjusted the north-south runway alignments on airports in North America by 1 degree. So there was a slight pole shift. And a lot of people say, well, we got melting ice caps, and it's because we got to get rid of our cars. Well, that may or may not help. I'm not going to debate that. But I will tell you this: if the poles shift, the warmer ice caps will melt because now they get direct sunlight exposure. But then other ones begin to build up that kind of move into its place. And it's thought that Newfoundland, Greenland area used to be the old North Pole. And do I think that's true? I think there's some pretty good science behind that. So we're going through a pole shift. And Europe has periodically, since that time, gone through record winter freezes. And their scientists are telling them, and their professors tell these co-eds that I had in class, that, professor, would they tell us we're going to have to move from Europe to Africa one day? And this was a universal thing, and these people didn't even know each other. We had a young lady that was that attended our university, and she was from Romania, and she told the same story as the Russian girl, as the two Swedish guys that I had in class. They all told the same stories, and these people were all brilliant. Seriously, if they'd have been going to an American university, so we're talking people that have been in the top 1% of their class. And they were saying, yeah, this is happening, but we think the shift is going to be sudden and dramatic. In other words, not slow and gradual, like continental drift, slowly moving South America apart from Africa. They said it's going to be dramatic. And this is what their scientists believe. And there's evidence for it. And I'll just give you one piece of evidence. In 1988, Russian researchers in Siberia found a woolly mammoth out of place, wouldn't you say? With undigested vegetation in its stomach. Well, whatever happened to that mammoth transported it a continent at least away to a different climate zone. And it happened in under 20 minutes because the vegetation in the stomach was frozen. Pretty remarkable. That was a stunning discovery. And it kind of flies in the face of what a lot of people in the mainstream media want you to believe. So they don't like to give it a lot of coverage, but you can look it up and you can find it. And this convinced me that what these young people were telling me in my classes, and this spanned about 4 or 5, 6 years, that what they told me, I said, I think there's really something to this. And then combined with my knowledge of what I was hearing from these scientists at Bill's meetings, I said, we're in a lot of trouble. The Hopis tell us that we are in the fifth world and we're headed towards another extinction. We have similar legends in ancient Chinese history, Japanese history, the Indian Arvaic, the Hopis, they all tell similar stories. Everyone talks about the flood. Now, sometimes there's a different twist on it, but they all talk about the flood. Well, there was more than one flood, as I have found out. And as I look back on these past civilizations, and right now we're looking in the background here at Egypt and the pyramids. We need to learn from our history because it's been repeated over and over. And our history tells us this is what's happened and this is what's likely to come. Now, I'm going to leave you with a little bit of hope here so you don't fly off into the night and have nightmares. Michio Kaku, for my observation, he's the top theoretical physicist in the country, maybe even the world. And he's divided civilization development into four types. And he says we're at the end of type zero. And at the end of type zero, you can begin to control the weather, the movement of your planet, and then you get into advanced type one. Now you can control, sun effects from that with technology, the solar system. And then expands the degree of control that human-based technology can control. But he also says this, he gives a really dire warning. He says that uranium is our biggest threat. He said, given the probabilities, 95% of the planets that reach our level of development will destroy themselves with uranium, i.e., nuclear weapons. And there's good evidence as I really unfold this series that this has happened before. And it's in all the ancient legends and the pyramids around the world, some of them above ground, some of them at the bottom of the ocean. They all tell similar stories. We're about ready to repeat history. And this is why the Ukraine thing has me so nervous. Putin should never have attacked Ukraine, but NATO should never have said, we're going to put Ukraine into NATO, and that would mean missiles on the Russian border. Both sides. This war that shouldn't have happened, it's been terrible. Countless people have died, and countless people are going to continue to die unless we find our way out of this war. And I hope for peace because it could expand to a nuclear conflict. In fact, what did the British Prime Minister say the other day in a speech? We're not above putting British troops on the ground in Ukraine. I think when that happens, Russia is going to respond forcefully with a uranium weapon, tactical uranium weapon. And I'm really nervous about this. And I know a lot of us are too. I thought at one time after the fall of the Soviet Union that the nuclear threat is over. We might have to deal with terrorism, but I thought that was over. It's more real and more threatening today than it's ever been. And one such conflict, and you go back to ancient folklore legends I'll explore later between Lemurians and Atlanteans, led to one of the catastrophic destructions on the Earth. And you're saying, oh, that sounds kind of out there. Stay with me. There's a lot of data. And there's a lot of people seeing the same thing. I've already done a show on this with Sarah Westall. Actually, I've done two shows with Sarah on this. Paul Preston knows about this. A lot of my close colleagues are totally aware. We could be living on borrowed time. And people say, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? Well, the second coming of Jesus, he says, if I didn't return for the second time, that there'd be no flesh left alive. And ultimately, I do believe this is a battle between good and evil, because in the Bible, it also says we don't battle against flesh and blood. We battle against principalities of darkness. And we all know what that means. So we're going to embark on this journey to talk about this. And we're going to really hit up the pyramids. And in fact, you know what? I think I'm going to shorten those sections. I think you're ready for this now. What do you think? So let's take a look at some of the things that I have found with the pyramids. And it's pretty remarkable. It truly is. I'm just going to read you some facts to cast doubt that the Egyptians built the pyramids. And let me ask you a question. Did you build your house? Well, some of you might have, very few, but someone. No, like me, we built our house in the country, but we had very little to do with it. We put the driveway in, but the framework of the house, the foundation, the roof, we didn't do anything with that. It was done for us. Now, we've moved in and we took one of our garages, and we've got a few, and we turned it into a studio. We're not in that studio right now. We will be here in a couple of weeks, but the Common Sense Show studio. We did do that construction and we put pictures up on the wall. We put new drywall in. We laid new tile in some areas, but we didn't build the house. Same thing's true with the Egyptians. They made some modifications. They didn't build it. Let me walk through some facts. We have 80-ton stones that they hoisted on ropes and pulleys. Please show me where we have a rope or a pulley that can do that with that amount of weight. We don't. Well, maybe they had cranes. Okay. Well, they didn't have bathrooms. So now you got cranes? We're getting ludicrous now. To hoist those stones, if you could even find a substance to hold the ropes together, would have taken an estimated 1.2 million slaves, a man with average upper body strength. 1.2 million. At that time in history in the Nile River Valley, when they say the pyramids were built 4 to 5,000 years ago, and they're much older than that in reality, there weren't 1 million people in the Nile River Valley. They didn't have the manpower. They couldn't have done it. In the 1980s and 1990s, the US and Japan, they put some engineers together and they said, let's build a scale model of Giza. We'll make it about 5% of what the original structure was. 5%. The project failed not once, not twice, but three times because the attempted construction collapsed under its own weight. We can't do what supposedly the Egyptians did. We can't do it. Well, how could they? Yeah, pretty interesting, isn't it? Okay, let's talk about the connectivity between the blocks, one block stone upon another on these pyramids. They're amazingly erosion proof, the pyramids are, because between the blocks, there's only 1/200th of an inch spacing. That's one whisker on a man's mustache. We can't do that with a single family home. Not even close. Not even close. In fact, let me tell you what happened with when they discovered this. There was a substance that holds these stones together. It's minute, 1/200th of an inch. And JPL from NASA came along and they asked the Egyptian government to come in and they wanted to do a scraping to try to figure out what that substance was that held those blocks together in such an impervious, unaffected way. And the Egyptian government generously said, yeah, sure, go ahead. What they wanted to use this for was to find the substance that would glue on the heat shield tiles to the space shuttle. And they worked on this for 4 years at JPL in California. They couldn't even figure out what the substance was. The chemical composition remained unknown to the top scientists in our country at JPL. So we had to abandon that project to go another way. Now, one interesting coincidence about the pyramid at Giza, the big one, the big boy, it's exactly the average elevation of the Earth. And then there's some interesting mathematical formulas that defy coincidence. When you measure the base perimeter of the Great Pyramid by 43,200, you get the equatorial circumference of the Earth. So now we have two Earth-like measures, and that starts to bring in how much coincidence are you going to accept? The average elevation of the Earth, that was not known till we put satellites up in space and could measure it that way, and then the circumference of the Earth and the formula that arrives at that. They never found any mummies. Oh, we say they're there, but we've never been shown any proof. I really reject that fact. I don't believe that there are. There are no written Egyptian records on how the pyramids were built. Everything we've been taught in school is supposition. It's hypothesis. It's theory. There's no hardcore facts. A little odd for an accomplishment of this level, wouldn't you say? Well, coming along here, Jerry Cannon and Malcolm Hutton claim that the Sphinx in front of the pyramids must have been carved out of natural rock. Now, this is really interesting because this begins to give you dates for the pyramid. So they theorized that the Sphinx was carved out of natural rock, and this was long before any sand covered the area, meaning that at one time, long ago, the area had to have been fertile. The Sphinx had to have been carved when there was no sand there. You can't carve a rock when it's under sand. This was 12,000 years ago. And we know our ice age was about 10,600 years ago. Interesting. Even archaeologists agree with this statement. There were no Egyptians in the Giza Plateau region 12,000 years ago. Now, here's where this gets really interesting. And this is going to bring us to the conclusion of part one here. The pyramids, there's no doubt, everyone agrees with this. This is not controversial. The pyramids align with the constellation Orion. Now, there's a computer software program you could put on your laptop. It's called Precession. And you can move back in time in a specific location that you're at. And you could chart where the stars were at that time is what you would see from where you're standing. So the computer program is called Precession. The Egyptians didn't have Precession. Okay? They didn't have computers. They didn't have electricity. They didn't have flushing toilets. Now, Do you want to know when these pyramids perfectly aligned with the constellation Orion? This is where a dramatic drum roll would help, but that's okay. I'll go forward without it. The alignment between the pyramids and the constellation Orion, the seven stars, the seven pyramids, 17,500 years ago. Whoa. Well, wait a minute. There's something else about Orion. Three of the stars you can't see with the naked eye. So this society without electricity, the society without running water or toilets, they had observatories, telescopes. How would they have even manufactured them? The answer is they couldn't, and they didn't. What we've been fed, I don't think, is necessarily purposeful misinformation. This information is 150 years old, 200 years old, and it was arrived at by people that didn't have technological expertise, did not have the ability to run Procession as a software program, and they were wrong. And then people dig in to believe their belief no matter what. Now, people say to me, well, then who built them, Dave, if the Egyptians didn't? I don't think it was aliens, and we're going to explore that in the next part of this. Don't think it was aliens at all, not aliens as we would define them as extraterrestrials, but I don't think it was the Egyptians. These pyramids predate the Ice Age, and here's what we know. Water erosion has been repaired three times. Twice by the British, once by the Egyptians. And you know when they say the water erosion occurred? When was the last time there was enough water in the Nile River Valley to have done that damage to affect a repair later in history? Well, that was 10,600 years ago. And what happened then? It was the Ice Age. So have we cast any doubt here? And this is for speculation and entertainment. But I truly believe that when we dive into our hidden history, we're going to find out we're moving down this path again. And what happened to them, and four times over, is getting ready to happen again. There's actually a book written, believe it was 1951, and I'm going to actually have to go look this up again and report on it. But the book wrote about the end of the world and was written by a very well-respected scientist. The CIA classified the book and took it from him. And then later they declassified it, but only turned out 57 out of 200 pages. I'm not the only one to say this stuff. In fact, I'm one of many. You want to really go find good work, go look at Graham Hancock. He's excellent at this. But I hope I'm raising your interest because we'll even end up in a point in history. This is really interesting. We're going to end up in a point in history where there's past civilizations that we can actually describe that have gone through and we know what happened to them and we're ready to go through it ourselves. I'm not going to be fatalistic because Michio Kaku gives us the ability to think that we might be able to rise above this technologically and stop it. Tebepi Keki, ever heard of that? They warned us about this. There are warnings all across the planet about this. And one more thing about the pyramids before we close on this part. We have the pyramids all around the world, and I'm going to show you examples of that in the next piece. The Egyptians were not seafaring people. So if they built those seven pyramids that we can't duplicate today with unknown technology, how is it that it ends up in all these other places? And oh, there's some stunning coincidences here too that we're going to explore. I hope you've enjoyed this, but stay with me because this isn't just a journey into the past to prove some ancient archaeologists wrong. This is about understanding our history so we don't suffer from he who does not learn from history will learn about it in the future because you'll relive it. And as Mark Twain once said, history may not repeat, but it sure does rhyme. We're going to have a lot of rhymes to this, and there's some concern. There's some concern. Anyway, I want to thank you for joining us. Again, check us out at our newsletter, thecommonsenseshow.com. Put in your email address, and it's a summation of everything we do in the last 24 hours. And people love it because it's one-stop shopping. You don't have to keep coming back. The other thing that people really appreciate is the convenience of it all in your mailbox. Over 50,000 people are doing this. We'd encourage you to do it too. And then we have our TV show, the Common Sense Show.tv. You want to sign up for a lot of interesting stuff over there. And we have our Patreon account, and we really do appreciate the support. It was good speaking with everyone here, and we're going to be back with another part. And I think you're going to say, holy crap, is this getting interesting? This is just the beginning. This was just to lay a foundation of speculative doubt as to the history we've been taught may not be as accurate as we'd like it to be. Thanks for joining us. Hello, America. Dave Hodges here, host of the Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Thank you so much for joining us. We would remind you that we have a great newsletter. It goes out to over 50,000 people, and it's one-stop shopping. This is why people love it. All you got to do to sign up to get a daily email, which is a recapitulation of everything that we do in the previous 24 hours, is go to thecommonsenseshow.com and put in your email address at the newsletter link. That's the only required field, and you'll receive yours often the same day. At the latest, the next day, the newsletter comes out late afternoon, early evening, depending on your time zone. And people say, thank you, Dave, for doing this because it really saves me a lot of time to keep up with the latest in news. We also have a TV show. People love that too. The Common Sense Show.tv. And we have a series over there. It's really interesting. It's called Hips. And people say, oh, it kind of reminds me of Art Bell. Maybe a little, but I have my own twist and my own bent, and I have my favorite topics. Some are in line with the former Art Bell show. And some are just in line with what I'm interested in. But hidden history, repressed technology, things that just you ordinarily don't really think about. We even do some mental health aspects. Today we did PTSD, two parts. It's a growing disorder, and people are really stressed out today. And I wanted to get that out in front. People had actually requested me to do that. That a lot of that's over there on the commonsenseshow.tv. Sign up today. Really, we're glad you're here. Don't forget we have a Patreon account. We really appreciate your support. Helps keep us going, paying for all the stuff that we got to do to cover what we cover here. Excuse me. The program is brought to you by Ageless Multi-Collagen. Nothing wrong with wanting to be youthful, especially with sore joints. This is really good stuff. You've lost half your collagen by the time you're in middle age and you start to wrinkle, hair falling out, nails getting brittle, and your joints are sore. Well, you can reverse all that with this proprietary process that blends the five types of collagen, five, into one, and it crosses the blood-brain barrier and begins to replace lost collagen. The problem with most collagen replacement products is they don't work. But this one does. In fact, they give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you're comfortable giving this a try. And no questions asked. Money back guarantee if it doesn't work for you. I ask the people, how many of these do you get back? They go, oh, it's like so rare. It's unbelievable. People love the product. I got friends that use it. I would recommend that you do too. And this is a good time to come into this. 51% off if you act quickly. Go to healthwithdave.com. That's healthwithdave.com.
You're exactly right.
JD Vance, our vice president. And I'm sure a lot of you, most of you know this. I want to say this before we hear what Vice President Vance has to say. Look, you can put the blame on Ukraine with Russia. They did launch the attack. There was some provocation. I don't think it rose to the level of having an all-out war. The Europeans, NATO, wanting to put Ukraine into NATO, thus threatening the security of Russia, I would have been upset too. There was a much better way to handle it than invade. So I'm not justifying Putin's actions, but I'm saying it takes two to tango. Both sides made mistakes, and I will grant that Putin made the bigger mistake. Now, having said that, I only care about peace. I want Ukrainian lives spared. I want Russian lives spared. I don't want this to explode into World War III, and I've talked about this a lot in the last 2 weeks. We are at a very dangerous time, and President Trump said it when he met with Zelensky in that infamous Oval Office confrontation. He said, we're really close to World War III. He is not embellishing that. That is absolutely a fact. And then the Brits and the French are, well, they're making inflammatory remarks that are probably, if there's a DEFCON 5 in Russia, they're probably a DEFCON 10 because of Macron and Stramer's irresponsible statements threatening escalation. We don't need this. We need peace. Peace, peace, peace. And I want to talk to you a little bit about what was agreed to. Zelensky came to the table in the Oval Office with the intent of signing the minerals deal. This would have been followed up with a ceasefire that Putin had already agreed to in principle, and then eventually peace talks to get us out of this horrible war, global threatening situation. And I'm going to say, as a Christian, I'm only interested in the preservation of life here. I'm not going to get into the tit for tat and who's wrong and who's right, but I'm going to tell you, Zelensky is really endangering the world, and he's endangering himself, and he's endangering his country. And it needs to stop. And I am highly critical of his. He's flip-flopped on the mineral deal three times by my count. And I'm going to talk about that deal in just a minute. But let's hear what J.D. Vance had to say in the aftermath. He makes a lot of sense.
Right, Sean. When the Ukrainians came to Washington on Friday, it was supposed to be ceremonial. You know, there had been some public back and forth, some disagreements, some words spoken in public. And the president was like, let's have this moment. We give some credit to the brave Ukrainian fighters. And of course, it's a very brave army that they have there in Ukraine. Let's sign this minerals deal, which importantly does two things. It allows the American people to get some of their money back, but it also shows the Ukrainian people that America has a long-term investment in their sovereignty.
I want to stop there and hit these two points. This is brilliant. I don't care if you're a Democrat, Republican, independent, or an atheist. I don't care what you are. This makes a lot of sense. The mineral deal. Number one, Ukraine should pay us back for helping to defend them. But I don't want to see the country bankrupted and they're eternally in debt to the United States as a result. That's not going to solve anything. That's just going to worsen a bad situation. It reminds me of Germany post-World War I, and we know what that led to. So I don't want to see that, but what I'd like to see is, yeah, you give minerals to the United States as compensation for the $350 billion that we spent on defending your country. But also, too, your minerals are developed by the United States, not by a depleted Ukrainian business community that's been devastated by the war. And the United States develops that and puts it into reconstruction of the country. Now, if the United States is going to make that kind of an investment into Ukraine, they're not going to allow Putin to come in and turn that around by breaking a peace deal to attack Ukraine again. That's not going to happen. We wouldn't be spending that kind of money and putting this kind of attention on the rebuild of Ukraine if we had the intention of laying down and letting Putin have his way with the country. Where is the logic in saying that's going to happen? He's going to break his deal. That's what I'm critical of Zelensky when he's in the White House. Putin's going to break his deal. Well, he's broken other deals. Yes, I agree with that. But this is the US, and Putin does not want to fight the US. No one in their right mind would. So, what we're looking at here is long-term investment into Ukraine. The United States then would have a protective nature towards Ukraine. And then, Putin, Ukraine, Trump, we come to a peace agreement. And then we turn Ukraine into a trading partner. And then I think we could have a provision where Ukraine can get into the European Union fully, but not have NATO. And we declare it to be a military neutral zone, with Ukraine retaining the right to protect its own sovereignty with its own military force, which was a mistake made by the League of Nations World War I when they didn't prevent, allow Germany to actively defend. They disarmed Germany, basically. And it made the Germans feel vulnerable and angry. And we know what it led to. And we don't want to see that happen here. So there's a way to resolve this peacefully and save lives. This isn't about Ukraine bad, Russia good, Russia bad, Ukraine. This is not what this is about. This is about saving lives and building Ukraine up to be the nation it could be with the help of the United States from the mineral investment. It's a brilliant plan. Trump is known, art of the deal. It's what he's known for. And I think this is fabulous because, number one, it saves lives. Number two, it reestablishes Ukraine as a viable nation. Can anyone please tell me what's wrong with this logic? J.D. Vance is saying it. Trump is saying it. Why is Zelensky running from this? And I'm going to tell you, Zelensky has another problem. And you need to hear this and hear this clearly. You got Britain stepping up, threatening to bring troops into Ukraine. Yes, they said it. You're getting Macron now making antagonistic remarks, threatening escalation of the war. But Europe is not totally on board with this. Orban from Hungary came out and says, uh-uh, we're not doing this. And we're going to protect our nation. We're not going to do what you bankers and you businessmen want to do because you see money at the end of the rainbow. This is effectively what he said the other day. He said, we're not on board with this and we're not going to contribute. And now the Prime Minister of Italy is saying, we're not supporting France and Britain in their recent statements. Europe is fragmenting. This is another reason why a deal needs to get made. a fair deal, one that will establish peace, preserve peace, help Ukraine eventually prosper, rebuild that war-torn nation, and maybe foster a relationship with Russia, Europe, the United States. And we live in a new age of more peace and prosperity. Now, you can say I'm a dreamer, but I'm telling you, I got the White House administration agreeing with everything I'm saying right here. What is Zelensky afraid of? Has he been such a bad leader that he's afraid he's going to be taken out in a time of peace? He's canceled his elections. I think that speaks to his fear level. If he knew, look at FDR. Okay, FDR elected twice in a war period, once when we were directly involved in the war. He didn't cancel elections. We had free and fair elections. What's Zelensky afraid of? And I think Trump could tell him, we're going to assure you that you establish a period of service and then you have elections. You get to serve that out. And if you ever needed to go and flee your country like the Shah of Iran in the 70s, you got a $35 million home courtesy of the taxpayers in Florida. You can go live there. There's no reason for this. Zelensky said the other day, and I hope it was just a comment made in frustration, Americans will send their boys to Ukraine to fight. Oh, when I was talking about this with a couple of friends, some middle fingers came out. It was not received well. My son is not fighting in this war. I don't give a damn who's president, who gets drafted, what the policy is. And I am in the mainstream, and I'm telling you, most Democrats feel the same way as I do, the independents, the Republicans. We are not doing this. We want peace and we want it now. We need to unite behind this movement. And Democrats, forget for a second that Trump is president. He's saving the world from a potential cataclysm of nuclear war. Isn't that enough for at least on this one issue we can unite? Can't we say we're going to put America first and set aside all our other differences? I hope so. And if it's not happening, then get on bended knee and pray that it does happen. I want to thank you for joining us. God bless all of you. Thank goodness for good leadership. Thank goodness for the common sense of Italy and Hungary. This is something that's got to be solved now, right now, right now. We're not following the European Union into war. And I'm going to make a final comment here. We got duped into war in World War I using the Lusitania's excuse, and the Lusitania was sunk a full 22 months before we got involved. Why was the gap there? Because Wilson told the business community, I'll give you your war, okay? Because your profits are being interfered with by German U-boats, but you got to wait till I get reelected. We ain't doing that again. And then World War II. Europe so punished Germany after World War I. And trust me, every nation involved in World War I shared blame in that process. It wasn't all Germany. It was not all Germany. And that pulled us into that war. My comment is there won't be a third time that we get pulled into this war. I am telling you right now, from the audience I have, from the people I talk to, and even the liberals, and some of them are my friends. I am friends with liberal people. Because they're decent human beings in their private life. We just don't share political views together. But they are not on board with sending their kids to Ukraine. And I'm telling you that right now. This is why we need peace and we need it right now. Put the heat on. If you're in a blue city, put the heat on your politicians there. You're in a blue state, do the same thing. Red state, just stay the course. We want out of this mess.